All right, we'll say good morning. Let's begin. Today, beautiful daf ahead of us. Today's daf is daf nun 50. We are picking up on Memtes Amud Beis 49b, and we're picking up with Ha'itmar Allah. Three lines up from the bottom. So remember again, we're in the middle of a fascinating, a riveting sugya. Discussing the idea that a husband cannot create a chazaka in the property of his wife. So the logic being, again, remember the Mishnah a few plot ago espoused a very simple idea, which is the only time you could establish chazaka is when you have no other legitimate reason to be on the piece of property. But because a husband is granted peros in his wife's property, therefore by definition, he has a legitimate reason for his presence. Therefore, again, his presence and his wife's lack of objection to that presence does not create a situation for chazaka. So the Gemara says, and in addition to that, even should a woman go ahead and sign away her rights to a particular piece of character, to a particular piece of property, she could always claim that the sale is voidable. Why? Because nachas ruach hasisi lebayli. I didn't really want to go ahead and sell this property, but I wanted to preserve my shalom bayis. I knew it was important to my husband, and as such, I agreed to the sale. I agreed to the transfer. So then the Gemara says, "Ha'itmar Allah." But one second, regarding that concept that a woman could void a sale based on the fact that she's saying nachas ruach hasisi lebayli, we said the following: Amar Rabbi Bar Afuna, lo nitzricha ela ba'osan gimel sados. So Rabbi Bar Afuna comes along and says, no. When could a woman say, take a look at the Rashbam. Rashbam, it's about seven lines up from the bottom. Ha itmar Allah, tahi dechazer v'lakach min ha'isha. Amar Rabbi Bar Afuna, lo nitzricha lemisni mekcho batal. Remember again, the Gemara even went so far, just a bit of Chazar from yesterday again, the Gemara even went so far to say the following, that even if I go ahead and I purchase a parcel of land from a man, now everyone knows if you purchase a parcel of land from a married man, so that sale is not totally complete. Why not? Because Lemaisa, again, the woman has a shibud, the woman has a lien against all property that is owned by her husband. So I figure, you know what? I have a great way to undermine that lien. I'll go back and I'll purchase her interest as well. In other words, I'll buy from the husband and I'll purchase the wife's interest, the lien interest in that property as well. So the Gemara said, such a sale like that is bottle as well. To which Rabbi Afuna comes along and says, one second, that's only true in three cases. Gimel Sados, three cases, three different fields, where even if you subsequently buy her interest, the sale itself is still void. What are those three cases? Achos, Shekasav La Biksuvasa. So I'll say one refers to a piece of land that the husband specifically wrote her in the ksuva. In other words, let's say in the ksuva, a husband goes ahead and writes, I owe you 200 zuz in the event of death or divorce, and that 200 zuz is collectible from this particular field. It's collectible from this particular parcel of land. So we'll say that's the type of land that's been identified where we would say that even if a woman subsequently sells off her interest, that sale is not really a valid sale because since that property is identified, therefore by definition, she does not give up her lien against it. Next, top of nun, va'achos sheyichei la b'ksuvasa. Was in the second case would be a piece of property that ultimately, again, she was miyached in the ksuba. Now, what does that refer to? Take a look at the Rashbam again. Tap Rashbam, no namad aleph. Lo kasav besoch hashtar, ala la'achar nisuin, yiched lo echad misadosav, va'asa apotiki, ligbos mimena ksubasa. Umiyu kol sadosav mishubadim, la besoch shtar ksuba, ala alze botachas yoser, hoil v'yachtu la bifnei edim. So, we'll say, second case will be a case ultimately again where the field is not written in the ksuva, but he was miyachid the field. In other words, we'll say this would be a case of after marriage. A man would say to his wife, in the event of death or divorce, you will collect your ksuva from this parcel of land. It's not written in the ksuva, but he was miyached it. He identified it and he specified it. And I will say, the Rashbam points out over here, this is what we would call an apotiki. So remember, we've discussed this concept before. Apotiki is a contraction for apotehe koi. From here is where you will collect. So again, her das is on this piece of land. And number three, va'achos sheikh nisa la shum mishala. And I will say, ultimately, the third case would be a case of where she brought in property, and this property was evaluated. We have the value of this property. Take a look at the Rashbam. Vacha Sheikh Nisla Shumishala, Sada Sheikh Nisla Mibesaviha, Vishamu Oso, Vikasu Shavyov Bishtaraksuba, Shekiblu Alav Habal Bidamim, Behain Nichseitzon Barzal. So also, this refers to Nichseitzon Barzal, means property that a woman brings into a marriage that is assessed, its value is assessed at the time of the marriage, and the husband guarantees that value. So whether that land appreciates, depreciates, whatever may happen to it, at the end of the day, a husband agrees to go ahead and pay that amount. So we'll say, so all of these are cases, where because these are specified properties, either again, specifically written in the ksuva, either post-marriage identified as the source for ksuva payment, or number three, pieces of property that belong to her, but whose value is guaranteed by the husband. We'll say, these would be cases where what? Well, watch this. Even if the husband sold that property, right? Remember, so that has a lien against it. And I were to purchase that property from the husband. And then I went back to the wife afterwards and said, you know, Mrs. Reuven, I want to purchase your interest in that property. Such a sale would be void. Why? Because it will say, Chazal HaMashiach, Chazal assume that a woman is not going to sell her lien or her interest in this property for one simple reason. This property, this is her security. This property, this is her ksuva. This property, this is her future. So even if you go back and you buy the interest from her, make chobato. So, okay, I understand then you tell me these three cases, make chobato. So what does it come to exclusive? In other words, which would be the cases where the maisa, if you were to buy her interest, then ultimately, again, it would work. If you want to say that it refers to other property, so the Gemara says that can't be. So we'll say, this wouldn't work, because again, this would also go ahead and potentially cause animosity in a marriage. In other words, if a husband goes ahead and sells property, and then what happens? So the buyer wants to go to the wife and buy her lien against that property, and she refuses. So both say it's going to cause major shalom bayis problems. Why? The Amar La Einayich Nasata Begerishin Ubamisa, because the husband will say to his wife, "Ah, oh, I see you're planning for death or divorce. The fact that you're not going ahead and willing to sell your lien interest against this property, I guess you have plans for the future." To which the Gemara says, "Ela Lemeute Nichse Malug." Rather, it must go ahead and come to exclude the case of Nichse Malug. So we'll say, remember again, Nichse Malug refers to property over which the wife retains title. She brings that property into the marriage. So the title is hers, but the use of the land, the peros, belongs to the husband. Aye, but one second, Ha'amra Meimar. But yet, Tabosa Meimar said, so first of all, just take a quick look at the Rashbam. Rashbam is pretty much in the middle of the intermediate wide lines. Elevade Lemeute Nichse Malug. So we'll say maybe again, Nichsim Lug is the case where ultimately if you go ahead and you buy it from the man and then you subsequently buy it from the woman, meaning you buy her interest in the property, that Lemaisa again a sale would be good. Because you will say, I might have said that since at the end of the day this property, the title belongs to her, therefore she has every right to go ahead and sell it. And there's no concern about going ahead and creating any kind of eva, any kind of animosity, to which the Gemara says back to the Gemara. So Ha'amra Meimar, but Meimar said, Ish v'isha shemachru b'nichse malug, if a man and woman both go ahead and sell the nichse malug, lo asu v'lo klom. Yet there was, we learned that, lamaisa again, if a man and woman both sell their interests in the nichse malug, lo asu v'lo klom. There was, again, such an act is meaningless. Now what does it mean, such an act is meaningless? Take a look at the Rashbam again. The Rashbam said, Ha'amar Ameimar, Ha'chi yasin kasaka daitcha hashta, the Ha'chi kamar ish shamachar va'achar va'ish lo asuklum, tematis amra nachas ruach. So why would it be no, loklum in this case? It's loklum because the husband doesn't have the right to sell nichse malug. Why doesn't the husband have the right to sell nichse malug? Why not? Because it's not his. It's not his. And bepashtos, the reason we're assuming the woman is lo asaklom is because she could claim, nachas ruach asisi lebayli. I was just trying to make my husband happy. To which the Gemara says, ki itmar da'ameimar hecha dezabin ihu umis asihi umafka. So we'll say, so when does Ameimar's statement hold true? That's when ultimately, again, the husband sells the property, he dies, And then again, the Gemara is teaching me, Asya ihi umafka. She, the wife, has the ability to go and extract that property afterwards from the purchasers. Inami. The other possibility is, Zapno ihi umesa. Asa ihu umafik. The Torah says, if she sells her nichsei meluk, and then what happens? And then dies, that the husband has the right to go ahead and extract that property from the purchasers. Why? Bitakanta d'rabbanon. The Torah says, and this is all takana d'rabbanon. What's the takana? Ukud Rabbi Yosi bar Chanina. The Amr Rabbi Yosi bar Chanina. The Torah says, listen to this fascinating idea. Buusha eskino. In Usha, they established the following halacha. Ha'isha shemachra b'nichsei meluk. Rabbi said, listen to this takanas Usha. So in Usha, they're attacking the following idea. That if a woman sold her nichsei meluk, a woman sold, Rabbi says, remember again, nichsei meluk, once again, property that a woman brings into a marriage, title remains hers, peros goes to the husband. A woman sells her nichsei meluk, umesa, and then she died. So, habal motzi miyad halakuchos. The husband has the right to go ahead and extract that property from purchasers. So, we'll say, so remember, so we'll call her Mrs. Reuven, sells off her nichsei meluk, sells it to Shimon. Mrs. Reuven dies. Her husband Reuven has the ability to extract that property from Shimon, which Rabbosai essentially makes up. I mean, what's the takana? The takana essentially is that a husband becomes like a first position balchov legabe his wife. So even though, again, in this, what's fascinating about this takana, what's fascinating about this takana is that lamaisa, a husband never actually had title to nechsei melug. All he had ultimately was, all he had was peros. Yet the takanas usha makes him almost like a lokeach, makes him like a purchaser, really makes him like a balchov, makes him like a creditor, so that when she dies, he has the ability to extract that property from the person who she sold it to. Ava, so Aisha Shemachar B'nechsei Meluk, Umesa Habal, Aisha Shemachar B'nechsei Meluk, Umesa Habal Motzi, Mi'adal Kuchos. Ava, Hecha, Dizabinu Tarvayu La'alma, Abba Rabbo say, watch this, and here's the operative part of our sugya. But what happens if both of them sold the nichsei meluk? What happens if both of them sold it? So Rabbo say, take a look at the Rashbam. Good morning, Mr. Schoenfeld. Good to see you. So take a look, Rabbo say, take a look at the law, at the wide lines, the wide lines. In the middle of the widest lines of a hecha dizabinhu tarvaihu la'alma, listen to this, hu machar esaperos, vehi machar esagof. Rabbo say, when we speak about both of them going ahead and selling the nichsei meluk, they're each selling different things. So he is selling his right to peros, she is selling the actual title to the karka. So if they were to both go ahead and sell their rights, back to the Gemara for just a moment, inami, zavna ihi lididei, or she were to go ahead and sell her rights to him, the Rashbam says, labayla, then in that case, Rabbi Osai, Zavina, Zavine. In those cases, her sale would be a valid sale. Take a look at the Rashbam for just one moment. Zabnaihu Zavini. V'lo matzis amrit. V'lo matzis amra. Nachas ruach asisi labayli. Dibishala lo avda nachas ruach. Dilo kapit ale bal. Hilchach shapir kadaika masnisin. Haraya yesh. Sheim yesh lo shtar o edim shemachra lo ishto nichse maluk shalah. Havia Mecca Kaib. So we'll say, I have wonderful news. The Shiloh that we opened up yesterday morning on Purim, now has finally come to a resolution. Remember again, we had a Mishnah that said to us that a husband cannot establish a chazakah in the property of his wife, which means a man goes ahead and uses the property of his wife for 3 years, and she never objects. So then, halacha lemaisa, what did we say? No chazaka. Again, what's the logic? The logic being that he has the right to use it, so of course she's not going to object. But what the Gemara inferred from that was what? Was that if there was a raya, if he brought a shtar, and he said, my wife, you sold me this property, that shtar would ultimately solidify and cement his ownership of the property. But remember the kasha we raised? The kasha we raised is, how could that be? How could that be? At the end of the day, she could always claim what? I know you have a shtar that says that I sold you the property, but I didn't. I want to make you happy. right? Right? These are words we hear every day, right? I just want to make you happy, right? I just want you to be happy. So, right? So whatever, meaning, so I'm going to sell you the property because you want to buy the property, fine. But at the end of the day, it was not actually my intention to go ahead and sell you the property. So we'll say, so now we worked through all of the cases and we finally figured out the case where what? There is one situation where a sale of a woman's property, where a sale of a woman's property, ultimately will be a bona fide sale. What is that case, Rabosai? That's the case of Nichsei Malug. Because what's the case of Nichsei Malug? The title of the property is hers. It's hers. It's the woman's property. And the husband understands that it's hers. So we'll say, because it is hers, therefore what? She has every right to do with it as she wants. And we'll say, this manifests itself for our purposes in two amazing and dramatic ways. Therefore, number one, should a wife sell her Nichsei Malug to her husband, what's the halacha? The halacha is the sale is valid. So should a husband produce a shtar that says, my wife sold me her nichsei malug, he is the owner, and she cannot claim, nachas rachas sisi labayli. I was just trying to make him happy. That sale is valid. What's the ramification number two? That if a husband and a wife both consent to the sale of the nichsei malug to a third party, then such a sale is binding. Then I will say, remember again, why do you need both of them to be able to consent to the sale of the nichsei malug? Why? Because also they both have rights. Remember, woman has title, wife has title, but husband has peros. He can't sell because he doesn't have title. She can't sell by herself because she doesn't have peros. So we'll say an incredible, incredible idea. And by the way, just to point out, this is halacha lemaisa. So should this come up for you today, you know exactly how to handle this situation. So it says the Gemara the following. Let's go back there. The Baisim, or the other possibility is, Ameimar Damak Rebbe Lazar. Ameimar Holzik Rebbe Lazar. Well, say now watch this. This Sanya, get ready. Hamocheres Avdo Pasakim Moshish Meshenu Shloshim Yom. Well, say this is a really fascinating case. I go ahead. I have an Eved. And I sell my Eved to Reuven. But I go ahead and I make up with Reuven that what? I'm selling you my Eved, but Eved, I still want the Eved to work for me for 30 days. For 30 days. So I'm selling him, but I want it to work for me for 30 days. Rabbi Meir, so we'll say, so now, there's an interesting halacha. Oh, let's read it. Rabbi Meir Omer, Harishon Yeshna B'din Yom O Yomayim, Mipnei Shu Tachtis. Well, so let's talk about this in just a moment. Torah says the following, Ach Im Yom O Yomayim Ya'amot, Lo Yukam Ki Kaspo. We'll say, if somebody goes ahead and damages or hurts his Eved Kenani. This is a Gentile servant. If the Eved Kenani dies, so a person is Chayiv Misa for that. A person is liable to a death penalty for that. If, however, the Eved, as a result, even as a result of the injuries, survives what the Torah calls Fiyom or Yomayim, a day or two. In other words, if the Eved does not die within a day as a result of his injuries, then ultimately the Adon is Pater from Misa. That's what's called the Din of Yom or Yomayim. So what happens? I have an Eved. I sell my Eved to Reuven, but the deal is that the Eved is going to work for me for the next 30 days. So I will say, so the Shaila now is, there are, technically speaking, there's an ownership tension. What's the ownership tension? On one hand, I sold the Eved to Reuven. On the other hand, the Eved is serving me for the next 30 days. So the Shaila is, who is subject to the laws of Yom O Yomayim? So it says the Gemara. Now let's go back. Rabbi Meir Omer, Harishon Yeshna B'din Yom O Yomayim, Mibnei Shu Tachtav. So we'll say the first owner is me, the one who actually sold the Eved to Reuven, but has the use of the Eved for the first 30 days. Vasheni, therefore, according to Rabbi Meir, the Rishon, the first owner, the first guy we'll call him, has the din of Yom O Yomayim. Hasheni eino bidin Yom O Yomayim. But Rabbi say the second owner, we'll call him Reuven, does not have the din of Yom O Yomayim. Why? Bipnei sheino tachtov. Because ultimately, again, the Eved is not in his domain. Rabbi say, now how can you say the Eved is not in his domain? After all, again, Reuven owns the title to the Eved. Oh, kasaver kinyan peros. Because they both say what happens, because we see from here that a kinyan peros, ultimately, again, the right of usage is the equivalent, ultimately, again, to actual ownership. So therefore, I both say, because I still have the right to use the Eved, therefore what? I am considered to be the actual owner of the Eved. Because I'm the owner of the Eved, therefore, I am subject to the laws of Yom O Yomayim. On the other hand, Rabbi Huda says, Hasheni, Sorry, just a second. So on the other hand, Rabbi Yehuda says, "Hasheni yeshno b'din yoma yomayim mifnei shu kaspo harishon eino b'din yoma yomayim sheino kaspo." On the other hand, Rabbi Yehuda holds that the second master, we'll call him Ruvain, he is the one ultimately again who has the din of yoma yomayim because the eved is his property, his kesef. On the other hand, I, the first owner, will say, the one who sold the Pana has the right to use the Eved for the first 30 days. I am not subject to the din of Yom Yomayim. Why? Because the Eved is not my property. Kasavar, Kinyan Peros, Lav Ki Kinyan Haguf Dami. Because Rabbi Yehuda holds that usage Peros does not equal an actual Kinyan over the object. So you hear this fascinating machlokas. So Rabbi Meir, Rabbi Yehuda arguing over here, what does Peros? Is Peros the equivalent of ownership or not? Rabbi Meir says yes, and therefore again, it is the first owner, the one who's getting the Eved for the first 30 days, who ultimately again is subject to the laws of Yom Yomayim. Rabbi Yehuda holds Kina Peros Lavka Kina Naguf, and therefore what? It is the second owner, Reuven, who is what we'll call the titular owner, he owns the title, that ultimately again, he is subject to the din of Yom Yomayim. Rabbi Yossi says, we'll say Amadeus, Shnehem Yeshnan Bedin Yom O Yomayim. So I said, this is very interesting. Rabbi Yossi holds, the truth is, they are both subject to the laws of Yom O Yomayim. Why? Mipnei Shu Tachtov, Zeh Mipnei Shu Kaspo. Because Rabbi Yossi, interestingly enough, both have a legal right, ultimately, to the Eved. This one, Mipneshu Tachtov, so I'll say this one being the first owner, the one who's using the Eved for the first 30 days, because the Eved is under his Rishus, Vizem Mipneshu Hu Kaspo. And I'll say ultimately again, the second one, we'll call him Reuven, because Reuven is the actual owner. Now I'll say, now what does it mean when you say that both are subject to the laws of Yom HaYomayim, O Mesafkele, Ikinyan Peros, Kikinyan Aguf, and I will say, ultimately, in Rabbi Yossi's worldview, so there's a machlokia, so there's a suffix, I should say. Do we say that kinyan peros ke kinyan aguf? Do we say that usage is the equivalent of title or not? Now, I will say, now the practical ramification of that is the suffix nefashos lahakel. Let's say, obviously, if you have a suffix as to whether or not kinyan peros is ke kinyan aguf, Is usage like ownership or not? If you have that suffix, then what? Then at the end of the day, I will say, then effectively, neither is subject to the laws of Yom HaYomayim. Because also remember again, just to be clear, the law of Yom HaYomayim says what? That if the Eved dies within 24, right? If the Eved dies within less than a day, if the Eved dies immediately, you're subject to death. If the Eved survives a day or more, you are not subject to death. We'll say if you have a suffix, then remember again, as Rashbam points out, Tarp Rashbam, Shnehem Yashnon, Upeturin, the suffix Nefashos, the Bailim Shukum, Mishenerag Mehem Lahakel. We'll say in general, we have a concept of suffix Nefashos Lahakel, that whenever it comes to a capital case, obviously, again, we are going to be mekel. We are going to be lenient whenever adjudicating any type of capital cases. They both say, so remember what we have over here? So far, just keep track of these shitos. The fundamental machlokes at play over here is, do we say kinyan aperos ke kinyan aguf or not? Is usage the equivalent of ownership? Rabbi Meir says yes, and therefore again, it is the first guy who is using the Eved for 30 days, who is considered to be the master, and therefore subject to the laws of Yom Yomayim. Rabbi Huda says no, and therefore again, it is the second guy who is the titular owner, he has the title to the Eved, who is subject to the laws of Yom Yomayim. Rabbi Yossi says, I'm not sure, meaning, I'm not sure if Kinyan Peros ke Kinyan Aguf Dami, and therefore again, I don't know if it's the first owner or the second owner who's considered to be the real owner, and therefore again, essentially, neither is subject to laws of Yom HaYomayim, because Safek Nefashos Lahakel. And now, Rabbi Elazar Omer, get ready, Shnehem Einon Bedin Yom HaYomayim. So the Shita Rabbi Elazar is that neither is subject to the laws of Yom HaYomayim. Why? Ze lefi she'ino tachtov, v'ze lefi she'ino kaspo. So Rabbi Elazar says, neither is subject to the laws of Yom HaYomayim. Why? Because Rabbi Elazar says, this one, lefi she'ino tachtov. Right? This one, meaning this one, is a reference to the Reuven, right? The real Baal. Right? This one, because the Eved is not currently working for him. V'ze lefishen okaspo, and mirabo say me being the we'll call him the first or former owner who's now has the opportunity to use the eved for 30 days. I'm not such as yom yomayim. Why? Because lemais at the end of the day, he's not my kesef. Right? So say he's not really my property, and therefore again, I will say neither of them are going to be subject to yom yomayim. So also, just by the way, just as an aside, as you can see, we paskin like Rebbe Lazar. So first of all, again, just to take one step back. Well, okay, let's finish this. Ba'amar Rava, Rava said, my time is Rebbe Lazar. Why is it? What's Rebbe Lazar's logic? Omer Krak, because the Pasuk says, Lo yukam ki kaspo hu. Because the Pasuk says, when speaking about the laws of Yom or Yomayim, says, Ach, im Yom o Yomayim yamod, Lo yukam ki kaspo hu. We'll say, if the Eved survives for a day or two, Lo yukam, there is no punishment that is leveled against the owner. Why? Ki kaspo hu. For the Eved is the property of the Adon, to which the Gemara darshins, kaspo hamiyuchad lo. We'll say, Rebbe Lazar's worldview ultimately is that the only time you could have a situation of Yom HaYomayim is where what? Is where you have an Eved who is the exclusive property of one Adon. But where the Eved to begin with is shared property, then Lemaisa, again, there is no din of Yom HaYomayim. So we'll say, so just, again, this is one of these fascinating Shas Machloks, and that's good to, could be good elevator talk also. You know, you're with someone, you know, want to make a little conversation-like conversation. By the way, did you see Machlokes, King in Paris, King in Aguf, for a Machlokes? So just so you understand, this is a Yisodistik Machlokes. So first of all, again, remember, it's manifesting in a very specific situation of Eved, of Yom HaYomayim, but the real underlying Machlokes is, do we say King in Peros, Kekinyan haguf dummy or not? That's really the real shiloh over here. Rabbi Meir says yes, Rabbi Huda says no, Rabbi Yossi says I'm not sure, and again, at least for the din of Yom HaYomayim, Rabbi Lazar comes along and says, in order for the din of Yom HaYomayim to be in effect, what? It has to be the, we'll call it the singular kesef, of one of the owners. If it's somehow there's some level of joint ownership, then there is no din of Yom or Yomayim. Now, both say, now I'll show you something interesting. So the Gemara, the way we got into this, just so you understand, the way we got into this is that Amemar was of the opinion like Rebbe Lazar. I will say, which for our purposes ultimately would mean that it's possible that Amemar holds that the only time that Lamaisa, the sale of a property of a woman, ultimately again will be valid, is in a situation where that property is singularly owned by the woman. In other words, the Gemara is linking the shitos of Amemar and Rebbe Lazar, which tells us just like Rebbe Lazar holds a din of Yom HaYomayim is only in a case where the Eved is owned exclusively by one master, so to the sale of property from a woman to her husband or to someone else will only be valid when that property is singularly owned by that woman. So we'll say, so bottom line, halacha l'maaseh, we merge with two important ideas. Two different pieces of halacha l'maaseh. First piece of halacha l'maaseh, we'll say, is, number one, a husband does not have the ability to establish chazaka in his wife's property. It's a very important yisod, which Shabbosai means that if a man comes along and says, I am the owner of this property, Baharaya, I've been using it for 3 years, and my wife never objected to my usage, we say to him, of course you have never objected to your usage. Why? Why? Oh, she loves you, right? Beautiful. Right? Because at the end of the day, you have peros, right? You have the right to use it. So of course you have no chazaka. We'll say, what about if he produces a raya? What if he produces a shtar that says that his wife sold him the property? So is that shtar considered to be a binding raya giving him, conveying to him ownership? To which we say, it depends. It depends on what kind of property. Specifically, again, if it's nichse mulug, then the shtar stands. If it's nichse mulug, then ultimately, again, which is property over which the wife has singular title, and he produces a shtar that says, I own this, produces a shtar that says that she sold him this property, then einachinami, that will establish his ownership over that property. Furthermore, I will say, if a third party produces a shtar that says the third party is the owner of the nichse malug, that shtar will be valid as long as what? as long as it has the consent of both parties, the husband and the wife. The husband selling his right in the peros, the wife selling her title, ultimately that transaction will stand. So we'll say that is halacha l'maisa by nichsei molog. Second piece of halacha l'maisa is the din of yom yomayim. We pass in like Rabbi Elazar, that when you have a situation of an eved that has some level of joint ownership. So in this particular case, where one person holds the title, but another person has the peros for some amount of time, because there is joint ownership, there is no din of yom yomayim. Yom yomayim only applies in a case where an eved is owned by one singular adam. Good, right there. Below ish chazaka b'nichse ishto. Let's say this is incredible stuff. Below ish lechazaka b'nichse ishto. So remember again, going a little bit weiter in this sugya. A husband does not have the ability to have a chazaka in the property of his wife. Baruch atah Adonai Eloheinu melech haolam shehakol nehyeh bidvaro. V'hamarav, but I've said, Eishes ish tzricha limchos. So this is an interesting case over here. So Rav said that Eishes ish, a married woman, has to object if someone is using her property. Take a look at the Rashbam, right across the Rashbam. Eishes ish, shehechsik achar b'nichse meluk shela. We'll say if there is a married woman and someone else is using her nichse meluk, she has to go ahead and object. Tzricha limchos, mishum dahu achar yish lo chazaka. So we'll say, if you have a fine situation, a woman who's married has nichsei malog, she has property, the property is hers. And what happens? Someone is using her property. She has an obligation to make a macho. Let me say it differently. If she wants to prevent that person from establishing a chazaka on her property, she has to what? She has to object. Which tells us what? That if she doesn't object, then what? Then that other person could go ahead and create a chazaka in her property. Samara says, "Bidman, who are we talking about? Meaning, who's using her property? Ilema ba'acher." So we'll say, if you want to say that it's an acher now, we'll say, who does acher refer to over here? Someone else, meaning someone other than her husband. V'ha'amarav, ein machzikin b'nichse eishasish. We'll say, very interesting halacha. You cannot make a chazaka in the property of a married woman. Right? Why? We'll say, why is that? Take a look at the Rashbam again. Ein machzikin b'nichse eishasish. Tematzia amra al baili samachti shehu yimcha v'ya'arar. Ulakach shatakti. U'bishabri adam delo bal ka'amarav din machzikin shkeimashra ein machzikin l'sham. So let's listen to this. This is fascinating. Another person, cannot establish a chazaka in the property of a married woman, even if the married woman was silent for 3 years. How? Why not? Because they will say, a married woman could always say what? I assumed my husband was going to make a macho. I assumed my husband was going to object to the usage of that property. Also, which makes sense. Why? You know, this is not like a din in defending one's wife. This is a very practical din. Any property that she has, bepashtos what? He has some level of rights in it, right? Whatever those level of rights are, right? Whether it's nichsei tzambarzan, nichsei malok, at the end of it, he has rights. So a married woman has every right to say, listen, I assumed my husband was going to object to the use of this person of my property. Therefore, again, I felt no need personally to go ahead and object to this individual's usage. So we'll say, what are we operating off of? We're operating off of the statement of Rav. Rav said that a married woman has to make a macha if someone is using her property in order to prevent that person from establishing a chazaka. We are trying to figure out who is Rav's statement referring to. Say if you say it's acher, if you say ultimately again it's referring to another person, that can't be, because the married woman is not obligated to make a macha in that case, because she's permitted to say, I relied on my husband to make a macha. Ela lav bebal. Oh, rather it must be what? It must be your husband. It must be that Rav is saying that a woman must make a macha, must object to her husband's usage of the property in order to prevent him from establishing chazaka. To which the Gemara says, but 1 second. Rav said, you're right, the olam babal. Indeed, you are correct. We are talking about the case of baal, of husband. But take a look at the Rashbam for just a moment. We'll say, elav babal. Alma yesh chazaka v'kashle masnis. So we'll say, here's the problem. The problem is now what you're telling me is that a man does have the ability to establish chazaka on the property of his wife. What's the problem? Very simple problem that contradicts the Mishnah, because the Mishnah told me that a husband does not have the ability to establish chazak in the property of his wife. Also, what's the case? So again, Rava says, no, you're right, the Olam Babal. We are dealing ultimately again in the case of Babal. If I'll say one more Rashbam, the Olam Babal, Shehechsik Penichse Ishto Kamarav. Indeed, we are saying now that a husband does have the ability to establish a chazaka in his wife's property. I'm just reading the Rashbam, second wide line, not the widest lines, but the intermediate lines. But what about the Mishnah? The Mishnah was so explicitly clear that a husband doesn't have the ability to establish chazaka in his wife's property. Sichin umaros dilaperos who deistabale nixim lug deisto falola kilkol akarka lachapiras boros. Okay, I suppose I watch this. So back to the ground. So I'm reading ahead. Amar Rava. Rava says the Olam Babal. I suppose I follow this train of thought. It's very exciting. So what happens? Rava says, you're right. What are we dealing with over here? When we spoke about the case, Rav's statement that said that's what? That if someone's using a married woman's property, she has to object in order of that a person shouldn't cement a chazaka. Who are we talking about? The husband. Husband, what are you talking about? The Mishnah said that a husband can't establish a chazaka in the property of his wife. Oh, we'll say, what's the case? Ukigon shechafar ba boros sichin umaros. We'll say, what's the case? You see, when do we say that a husband can't establish a chazak on the property of his wife? We'll say, that is, let's say a husband goes ahead and uses the peros of his wife's field for 3 years. He doesn't establish chazak there. Why not? Because he has those rights. That's not indicative of chazaka. That's the usage of his regular rights. Amar Rava, say, watch this. Let's say he decides to dig holes. He's got some time on his hands. He decides to go ahead and dig boros sichnamaros. Rava, say, that's demonstrative of ownership. Because Rava, say, the moment that he starts getting peros, that's not demonstrative of ownership. That's demonstrative of his rights of peros. But if he starts digging pits in the field, and the Rashbam just points out over here that it's dafka sada she'ena asuya laboros. It's dafka sada, which again you would not normally dig pits in, and he's digging pits. What does that show? That shows, and she will say, and what's the case? The case is where what? She doesn't say anything. She doesn't object. That's demonstrative of ownership. For 1 second, it's kasha. V'amrav nachman amrav aravua. Ain chazaka l'nizakin. Rabbi, say 1 second. We learned this concept before that you can't establish chazaka through destructive activity. Take a look at the Rashbam again. Ain chazaka l'nizakin. Kilamar hecha demazik lechaveiro. Ain yachalitom lekucha hibiyadi. Shareich zakti ba gimel shana bechaviros baros sich lemaros. Tchi aygav me lahavi chazaka dematitoin idoch. We learned you cannot establish chazaka through destructive activity. Rabbi will say, now the logic over here is quite interesting. You can't establish chazaka through destructive activity for one simple reason. Because the owner of the land could say that since you are not demonstrating ownership in a proprietary constructive way, like that, proprietarily constructive, I like that better. Good. I'm going to get a second opinion. Proprietarily constructive? Good, fine. Proprietarily constructive way. Therefore, lemais again, I've always said that's not called chazaka. In other words, the Rashbam says that because it was not proprietarily constructive, therefore, again, I felt no need to object to that. Therefore, I've always said there is no chazaka through destructive action. So even if the husband's digging boros, sichinu, ma'aros in the property of the wife, that doesn't establish his chazaka. To which the Gemara says, Eima ein din chazaka l'nizakin. No. I will say, listen to this. The Gemara says, when Rav Nachman said, Eima Rav Ravua, din chazaka l'nizakin, I will say, what he meant was the following. Ein din chazaka l'nizakin, which means what? This is amazing. See, normally chazaka takes how long? Normally chazaka takes 3 years. There are some acts that are so profound, that are so impactful, that are so powerful, that they establish chazaka immediately. Like what? Like what? Like destructive activity. I was like, when you destroy property, ein chazaka gidola mizo. Right? The greatest demonstration of bilis is the ability to do whatever you want with the property, even what? even destroy it should you choose. The Gemara is suggesting, maybe what it means is like this, that at the end of the day, when the husband starts going out and digging boros, sichin, ma'oros, in the wife's property, then what? That you don't even need 3 years. That's immediately demonstrative of chazaka. Ibai same. Another possibility is lav itmar alo. Rabbi say, when did we say that in chazaka l'nizokin? That's Rav Mari Amar Bekutra, Rav Zavid Amar Bebeisaki said. Rabbi say that was with very specific types of hezek. Right, whether again Abosai is referring to someone ultimately again who keeps a fire burning that produces a lot of smoke, or a base like Kise, an outhouse. So Abosai, take a look at the Rashbam for just a moment. Bibai Sima Ha Itmar La Rab Mari Amar Kilomar Bibai Sima the Olam Cheskas Gimel Shana Ba'inon. It could be that even under normal circumstances, the Chazak of 3 years. Afilo Heichad the Chafer Ba Boros Kida Okmina Lemilsa the Rab. V'Hav Dikam Rab Nachman in Chazakul and Izakin Lo Becheskas Gimel Shana Bekarka Chaveiro Airi Ela Ba'ose Hezek LeChaveiro Afilo Bebayis Shal Atzmo Kegon Ashan. So the other possibility is, when do we say in chazaka l'nizakin? That's only in the case of also of ongoing damage, like smoke damage, or like having a beis hakise, which again produces obviously a negative odor within the property of the individual. Rabbi Yosef, Rabbi Yosef, we just read more line, then we'll stop. Rabbi Yosef, Amar the olam ba'acher. In reality, we're talking about, again, someone other than us. We're supposed to say, listen to this. So, you know, maybe what we'll do is like this. So remember, just let's keep our eye on the ball. We're trying to focus on over here. Rav made a statement. And the statement that Rav made is that Eishes ish tzricha limchos. That a married woman has to object when someone is using her property in order to prevent that individual from establishing a chazaka. We are trying to figure out who is it that she has to object to? Who are we talking about? So it can't be Ba'achar, it can't be someone else, right? Why? Because mostly we established otherwise that a married woman doesn't have to object to someone else's uses of her property. Why not? Why not? Because she assumes ultimately, again, that it's going to be her husband who is able to do that. Rather, the Gemara said that what? It must be the Baal. It must be her husband. But 1 second, I'm going to say, how exactly is a Baal demonstrating a chazaka, ownership of her property? If it's just by going in and getting the peros, then what? Then what? That's not going to be good, because no chazaka by peros. Why? Because that's his right. So maybe you're going to say it's damages. Maybe what he's doing over here is that he's damaging the property. So I'll say, here's the problem. The problem with that approach is that there's, even though we have a statement of ein chazaka l'nizakin, you can't establish a chazaka through destructive property, there's a machlokis exactly what that means. Does that mean there's no chazaka through destructive property? Or does it mean what? Or does it mean, no, there's no stronger chazaka than destructive activity? Because lemais, again, that's the greatest demonstration of ownership. But even if you say that, what types of nezek does that apply to? Therefore, Abosai, that interpretation of Rav's statement does not work. We're going to stop over here. I'm leaving you a little bit on a cliffhanger. And tomorrow morning, Yemirat Hashem, I'm going to pick up with the statement of Rav Yosef. And Rav Yosef has a new interpretation as to how to understand the statement of Rav. Shkoyach.